Did you ever have a moment when you realized that your name conveyed something about you?
I didn't really love my name as much as a child. Like, I would question my family, why is my name Selah? Like, I've never heard anyone with that name. But when I got older, I started to appreciate my name more because I felt like it was unique.
Well, my first name is John, but I don't go by John because there's so many Johns in the world. So I go by Gordon.
I used to go by like Lizzie and Liz when I was younger. I just go by my full name now, mainly because I felt like it was a personality people were assigning to me through my name.
I think because my name is so common that you kind of just know people by their last name, like Sophia A or Sophia B. So I think my last name means a lot more than me too. Because my last name is ethnic, I think a lot about my family and where it originates from.
My mom always told me that she named me Devin because it wasn't like a black name. She experienced a lot of racism in her life and didn't want her children to.
Welcome to the show. I'm Kai Wright. It's kind of remarkable just how much meaning our names carry, right? And history, as Devin was just saying. We think they're pretty great conversation starters here, so we're going to talk about them in depth this week. And the show is special to us because it is fully in response to something we heard from one of you, our listeners. It all goes back to another show we did about a month ago. I spoke with data journalist Mona Chalabi about the U.S. Census and what the most recent count revealed about the increasingly complicated relationship between people in this country and racial identity. The second largest racial category in the U.S. now, as a result of that last census, is, quote, some other race. So we talked to Mona about that fact and the reality that a lot of people now struggle trying to place themselves in the traditional racial and ethnic categories. This part of race and identity has become quite fuzzy. So we invited you all to share your stories and your reflections. And to start tonight's show, our senior digital producer, Kusha Navadar, is going to share some of those messages you sent. Hey, Kusha.
Hey, Kai.
So people have been reaching out.
Yes. And if you're listening right now and you sent us something, thank you. It really does mean a lot to us. Like you said, Kai, we asked a pretty open-ended question. It was basically, do you have any challenge identifying yourself? Or what do you make of the fact that the category some other race has become such a popular option? Here's what some people had to say.
I think it's really because people of color, non-white people of color, don't want to be black. In the United States, black people are the lowest rung in terms of power, et cetera. So they can't claim white, so they claim other. They're mixed with something else.
I have always felt that I am the other. I am Jewish, and with the uptick of anti-Semitism, I think we have to take another look at whether the Jews in the United States are white or are the other. That's something I struggle with.
Hi, my name is Jason. I live in Brooklyn. I'm half Lebanese, half white. And I think ever since a really young age, I kind of just perceive myself as a white person. And it's really only in the last 5 or so years that I've kind of started to see myself differently. Interestingly, I've also heard some friends refer to me as a person of color. And I must say, I feel a little unsure about that. I'm not sure that that's an accurate description of me. And I also feel like there's other people who are more deserving of that category or who better fit that category. So it's really murky and confusing. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the segment. I really enjoyed your guest and I hope you continue to cover that topic.
So that goes in a lot of different directions, Kusha. And it strikes me that part of the challenge here is people are being asked to rank themselves in a caste system, actually, that we don't really name in this country, but nonetheless quite exists. That's what I hear in our first message. That was from Deborah. But it's also interesting how in the next two messages, that's Linda and Jason, they aren't quite doing what Deborah thinks. You know, they're in this good faith struggle to place themselves. And it's confusing because the whole thing is really just senseless in the end, but at the same time, so relevant.
Yeah, I hear people trying to navigate where they fit in this idea of white. But it's not just about being labeled as white. It's about power and perceptions of power. And there's one concrete way that came up for another listener. We got another voicemail that I thought was special.
Hi, Kai. My name is Evan. I'm calling from Lincoln, Rhode Island. The part of the conversation that really stood out to me was the part about names and how that is sort of used as a tool to either emphasize your race or maybe try to de-emphasize it as a survival tactic. Now, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my mother's black and my father is white and Chicano. My mom has never confirmed this, but I think she named me Evan as a sort of defense mechanism against racism. I do know that she's had a lot of trauma around race in America, but what really, really struck me about it is I'm now married to a white woman and our first child is due tomorrow and we named him Kendi, and you know, part of that was after Ibram X. Kendi, and part of it is just based on the meaning of the word in Kenya, but I've really been thinking about the fact that, like, I don't know what my child is going to look like. Is he going to look black at all with this African name, or is he going to look very white with this African name? And what kind of implications is that going to have in his life? I really wonder how he is going to connect with the concept of race as it's shaped. Yeah, I love your show. And yeah, thank you for doing what you do.
Evan, talk about burying the lead, man. Shout out to Evan and baby Kendi. We got to tell Ibram Kendi about this.
Yeah, has anyone sent us a voicemail the day before their baby was born?
I truly have no idea, Kusha, but let's just call this a first.
Okay, is there a way to, like, send him a WNYC onesie? Like, does that exist?
It does exist. It's one of the most popular things in the WNYC swag bag, and we are totally sending that to you, Evan, so check your mail.
Yeah, this voicemail has so much to unpack. How will Evan's choice of the name Kendi influence baby Kendi's life, his identity, even the way he perceives his race? And it feels so personal too, right, Kai? Like, for me, my name, Kusha, I love my name. And having a name that you don't hear very often, that you can't really place, it's made it simultaneously a great gift and somewhat of a burden, like when people can only read my name and they don't see my face.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
Yeah, so imagine you're in kindergarten and every teacher mispronounces your name the first day they meet you. You have to decide whether to correct them or let it slide. Or imagine sending in a resume where they don't see your face and they don't know based on your name, your gender, where you're from. Except that part probably happens later than kindergarten, but just bear with me. But now repeat that over and over again with every new interaction that I've experienced, and even the ones that happened when I'm not paying attention. It's really shaped the way that I interact in the world, and it's in both good ways and challenging ways. And so hearing Evan's voicemail made me think we should do a whole show on this.
Sounds like we got an episode.
Sounds like we got an episode.
So today we're going to talk about our names. What's the significance and challenge of choosing a name for yourself or a child in a society where the name may signal things, frankly, about caste, but generally about race and identity, good, bad, and otherwise? I'll be joined by novelist and essayist Bik Minh Beth Nguyen, who has written about her own journey with her name as a Vietnamese-American growing up in the Midwest. She wrote an essay for The New Yorker called America Ruined My Name for Me. We'll talk about that, we'll talk about her other work, and we will take your calls. What does your name mean for you? And at what point did you realize that your name meant something to other people that maybe you had to deal with? We'll get started right after a break. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Kai Wright, and we're talking about our names this week. Beth Nguyen arrived in the United States as a young child. Her family fled Saigon during the Vietnam War, and after passing through a series of refugee camps, finally settled in Michigan, where she grew up in the 1980s in an area that she describes as deeply conservative and mostly white. At the time, her name was not Beth, but as she wrote in her New Yorker essay about a year ago, at some point she decided that her life would simply be better if she stopped using her given Vietnamese name and instead went by Beth. She's now a celebrated author. She's written two novels, Short Girls and Pioneer Girl. Her memoir is called Stealing Buddha's Dinner. It tells her story of trying to find a place for herself in U.S. culture. And Beth, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can we start with your given Vietnamese name? The fact that people around you couldn't pronounce it was one of your first sort of big experiences with feeling like you were an uncomfortably different as a little kid. And, you know, I have probably pronounced it three different ways already, your last name, at least in the course of this show. So that would be an example. What's the proper pronunciation of your given name? And I gather there's actually no correct way to say it, or there's a few correct ways to say it. Let's start there.
Well, my given first name, spelled B-I-C-H, has an accent mark over the I, so that it really should be pronounced Bic, you know, but you know, most people just say Bic, like B-I-C. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My last name, which is the Smith of Vietnamese names, is Nguyen. But most people say Nguyen or Nguyen. Neither is correct, but both are acceptable somehow to all Vietnamese Americans.
We try. And when did that name, your first name, begin to feel like a problem for you? You were quite young, right?
From my earliest memories of being in school.
Mm. Tell me more about that.
So the roll call is a source of trauma for me. And I read an article, you know, a few years ago that, you know, said that students who are exposed to sort of prolonged mispronunciation of their names when they're very young do kind of internalize a form of trauma. Mm. And I read that piece and it really resonated with me because I realized, oh yeah, that was me. The lengths that I would go to starting from, you know, kindergarten to stop teachers from saying my name out loud because they were always going to say it wrong or it was always going to be an embarrassing moment for me. I can feel right now the stress and anxiety that I felt back then.
And was that embarrassment, was that about something that was happening for you or about the way that other students reacted when the teacher mispronounced your name?
Oh, it was completely my own problem because I was, you know, kind of alone as a Vietnamese refugee in a mostly white school and a mostly white environment. And I was absolutely the odd person out. And so, you know, this being the deep 1980s, I've absolutely internalized everything negative and assumed that it was all my fault and everything was mine to bear. And so I just carried around a lot of shame about who I was and what my name was, trying really hard to be like everyone else, knowing that that was completely impossible. And that started with my name. I could never present myself as even pretending to be like my friends because of my name.
Yeah. You wrote in your essay in describing that it didn't make, quote, it didn't just make me stand out, it made me miserably visible, which is a, I don't know, that really strikes me, that phrase, miserably visible. We talk so much about the need for visibility. And you're saying, actually, my visibility made me miserable.
Well, visibility can go both ways mm-hmm. in that, you know, yes, like now everyone wants to be represented, wants to be visible. But when you are, you know, completely outnumbered, it can be a real danger and liability. Yeah. And that's what I felt, you know, back then.
It's not uncommon for people in immigrant families in particular to take an anglicized nickname, you know, to have one name at home and another at school. I gather that was a first thought that your parents rejected, that they didn't want you to do that. Is that correct?
That is correct. And a lot of people that we knew with complicated names did have two different names. My family was against it. They, you know, I don't disagree with them. I mean, they wanted all of us to be sort of proud and just, you know, state who we were and not back down. And I see the logic. I really do. And I support it. But as a kid going through it, it was really, really hard because of what I felt was that I was stuck between wanting to please my family and wanting to please, you know, my friends, and just knowing that whatever choice I made would be a form of betrayal.
And did they literally tell you that as a kid? Or they're like, you should be proud of this. We got to stand up in this mostly white neighborhood. Is that what they said to you? And how did you process that as a kid?
Yeah. Well, they weren't that nice about it. It was mostly like, no, who do you think you are? Mm. You know, those were tougher times back in the, you know, early 80s. We were just trying to get by, trying to survive, trying to, you know, make a sense of home. And I just don't think my family had just, they just didn't have time for that nonsense.
Yeah.
And you know, the nonsense of feelings, that we were just like, I'm not from that generation of feelings, which is now the now generation of feelings. We were just having to go about our business. Mm. And so I really learned to keep all of those feelings to myself.
Mm. Well, your family had been through a lot too. And we'll talk about that in
a
second.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, is there any cultural significance to your name in Vietnam that they were holding on to? You know, what would it have been like to be if you had been in Saigon as Bích Minh Nguyen?
Oh yeah, Bích is a really common name in Vietnam, and it's, you know, considered a beautiful name. It's sort of like a form of jade. And I've met quite a few other people named Bích now over the years. And yeah, it's quite common. When they named me, they didn't think that they were giving me a strange name or that they were burdening me in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's hear your family story a little bit, you know, because I think that's relevant for where they were coming from probably too. You know, I mean, you arrived in Grand Rapids from Vietnam. You had been through quite an ordeal. In your memoir, you share the experience of your father trying to find a way for you and your family to escape Saigon any way he could. What did he tell you about that journey? What was his experience?
Yeah, I was a baby when we left, but it was literally the night before the end of the war. It was April 29th, 1975. And it was luck, desperation, chance. My father had been in the army, and so it had his brothers, and, you know, they just had to find a way out. And, you know, we were refugees, and we had the refugee experience of casting out into a river, into an ocean, and very luckily getting picked up by a naval ship, a U.S. naval ship. And so we were in refugee camps in the Philippines and Guam, and then in Little Rock, Arkansas, until we were sponsored by a church group in Michigan, which is, you know, why we ended up there. And, you know, and nobody knew what was going to happen, even, you know, in 1974 when I was born. And that's, you know, something I think about a lot, which is the circumstances around us change all the time. And mm-hmm. that the decisions we think are so great right now, they will feel different very soon, perhaps.
It's really profound. I mean, 8 months' time, right? You know, they just had a totally different understanding of what their future was going to look like.
And so, like, I know it was like they had been through hell. They had been through a lot. They were processing a lot of, you know, violence and actual trauma. So my small problems about my name were not, you know, even then I knew it was just not something that was important compared to what my family as a whole was going through.
But how do you think your tensions with your name impacted your life? You know, first off, I mean, were there any positives, by the way, that came from as a kid when you were, before you changed your name and you were going by Bích still? I mean, were there any positive parts of that?
I didn't change my name until I was in my 30s. So I've lived more of my life as Bích than I have as Beth. I think the positive in hindsight is that I became a writer. Although as I'm saying that, I'm like, is that a positive? I don't know. Not sure. I could have just, you know, been a happy reader. But I do think it made me very, very self-conscious. And I was, you know, subconscious anyway and very introverted. And having a name like mine that required me to have so much explanation, honestly, just maybe not go anywhere. It's like, I don't want to meet people. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to have this conversation. I can just stay at home and read and write. And, you know, I don't have to explain that to myself or to anybody. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do think it set me on a certain kind of path. So, you know, I don't regret it in any big way. I think about it though as something that, you know, shaped my consciousness.
Yeah. We have one caller who's asked one of our producers, you know, if you have a challenging name, don't people just ask you how to pronounce it? And I think, you know, underneath that question I can hear is like, why is it such a big deal for you to have to say how to pronounce your name? Can you help people understand like why that's such a big deal?
You know, you would think that that would be true, but in fact, almost nobody does that. Mm. Very, very few people actually have ever said, how do you pronounce that? They usually make a comment. They make a joke. Almost always they make a joke of the most expected joke you can imagine is what they usually say. Or they, you know, say something that is sort of derogatory or slightly embarrassing. It's something always awkward to deal with. Almost nobody has ever just said, oh, how do you pronounce your name without commenting on, oh, that's a weird name. Or what kind of name is that?
Right. Right.
You know, the neutrality of how do you pronounce your name, I would welcome. And that's what I try to do now when I meet people, is to ask them how they pronounce their names.
It was always set up as an othering device when presented to you. Were you, as a young person, were you aware of the way race and ethnicity played into that? Or was it just, did you feel like I'm just different? People are just treating me differently? Or were you aware of?
Oh, no, I was very aware. Very aware, yes, because also my earliest memories of school are of racist comments. And, you know, it's those are so obvious, you know, especially when they're directed at people of Asian descent. Mm-hmm. And so the being made fun of for how I looked and what my name was and just would carry on toward like the things that we ate or the way that people would talk about things that we ate or presume that we ate and things like that. So yeah, I knew from the start that it wasn't just that it was an odd word, but that it was absolutely tied to my being Asian and specifically being Vietnamese, which represented a huge loss, loss of a war. And, you know, when I was growing up, people all the time would say that I was to blame. You know, they just assumed that I was, you know, my family was on the quote unquote wrong side of the war, which obviously makes no sense because why would we be refugees in the United States? But yeah, so there was just a lot of confusion.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide to become Beth instead? You said in your 30s, right? Tell me about that moment. What led to that?
I was so tired. I was so tired of having to explain. And I thought it would get easier as I became, you know, a so-called grown-up, but it didn't at all. The same comments, the same questions, you know, it got easier with my last name. I remember distinctly when people at the airport started, you know, saying Nguyen or Nguyen, and that was a wonderful moment, but it never got easier with my first name. And then I was pregnant with my first child and I realized that if I keep going by this name, Bic, my children will have to deal with it. They will have to deal with the secondhand experience, the secondhand shame and embarrassment, possibly, that I dealt with. And I just couldn't go through that again. Wow.
So did this shape then how you named your own children?
It absolutely did. Yeah, my children have very simple names. Nobody can get them wrong. You know, they're, you know, simple to spell, straightforward, and that's exactly what I wanted. And just the ease of the naming is, to me, a source of relief, but it's also just a way to be slightly anonymous. And I know that a lot of people don't want to be anonymous, and I think it's, you know, it's weird for a writer to even talk about being anonymous, but there's something to me so wonderfully anonymous about a name like Beth Nguyen. It just fades into the background.
I was going to ask you about why Beth. So I guess that's why you deliberately chose the most I, no shade to anybody named Beth out here, but you deliberately chose something that felt really boring to you.
Yeah. And you know, I felt like the name kind of chose me because, you know, over the years I had tried out a lot of names that I genuinely liked. You know, if I had chosen my name when I was in fifth grade, you know, you'd be talking to Tiffany right now, perhaps, you know, or Anastasia.
Anastasia's a great name.
Interest in like dramatic names. But I knew, you know, I looked in the mirror. I was like, I'm not Anastasia. That's not, I can't even fool myself. I can't pull off Anastasia. I'm ordinary looking kind of gal. And so over the years, I would take on the Golden Girls' names. That was a big one for me. I would be Sophia, you know, Rose. Blanche and Dorothy are harder to pull off, you know, if you're Asian, honestly. But Sophia was a good one. And then just one day, just the name Beth occurred to me. And I was like, whoa, why didn't I not think of this before? Starts with a B, four letters, totally ordinary, forgettable.
And do you ever, is there any regret to that? I mean, I know that one thing you wrote in your essay that struck me is that the people who ask you this kind of question that are saying like, oh, why would you change your name? It's so beautiful, are mostly white, which is striking to me. But do you wrestle with it in any way? You sound so clear that like, no, what I needed to be was Beth.
I do not wrestle with it. No. Mm. Life became so much easier the minute I started calling myself Beth. I became just less stressed out about every introduction. Nobody questioned me. That was a funny thing. Like in the back of my mind, I kind of thought I would introduce myself to somebody and they'd be like, well, what's your real name? And then I realized, oh, you just tell somebody and they have to believe you. You know, and so the more I said it, the more real it became. And just like that, I just felt like my stress level lowered. And so I don't struggle with it at all. And it also makes me feel like I have more than one identity, which I really love.
Are your parents still alive? How did they react?
Yeah, so my family still calls me, they still call me Bick, and that's fine by me. In fact, I told them when my dad, he actually read that New Yorker piece, and after he read it, he was like, should I call you Beth? And I was like, no, Dad, that would be actually really weird. Please don't. Really strange. But I feel like it's just my family who can call me Bick, and it feels normal and good. Yeah.
I understand that the response you got to your New Yorker article was striking to you, that you received really a strong response. Can you characterize it? What kind of things did you hear?
I did. I was overwhelmed. I received hundreds and hundreds of messages and emails. Some of them were so moving and powerful. People told me secrets about their anguish and their lives. And I was really moved that people took the time to tell me their story. Those were the majority of the emails I got, were just wonderfully beautiful messages. There were, there were some really angry ones as well. And I try not to dwell on those so much. But yeah, there were some angry,
angry at you for changing your name.
Yeah, race betraying, that kind of email. And, who do you think you are kind of emails. You're nothing special. Who cares? And then a lot of people were really mad about the title, which, it's not my title. It is a slightly aggressive title, but I didn't choose it. So yeah, some people were really mad about that. The whole like, America didn't ruin anything for you. You should be grateful to be in America.
Wow.
And I was like, I never said it wasn't.
All I said was, stop making me, stop ostracizing me by my name is what I said. And here we go again. I'm talking with Beth Nguyen about her chosen name today and how her given Vietnamese name shaped her life as a kid growing up in a largely white, conservative Midwestern town. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll start taking your calls. What does your name mean to you? And at what point did you realize that it also meant something to other people? And our first caller is going to be my mom, who I've asked to tell the story of my own name. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, this is Kusha. I'm a producer. Earlier, you heard Kai mention a previous episode that started the conversation you're listening to now. That episode was from last month, February 21st. It's called Why So Many Are Stuck in the Other Box. We talked to data journalist Mona Chalabi about how defining your own race can be complicated. Like, what counts as white, or what if the boxes don't fit at all?
Like, I could either choose the thing that feels closest, which is really bizarre to be choosing between like white, black, and Asian when you're Arab, or I can select other, or I could just, you know, not participate, which is something that a lot of people choose to do.
You can check out that episode wherever you listen to your podcasts. And seriously, send us your voicemails. Sometimes they're inspiration for entire episodes. Messages under a minute are best. You can record yourself on your phone and email us. The address, it's anxiety@wnyc.org. Again, anxiety@wnyc.org. Thanks for talking to us. We couldn't do this without you. Talk to you soon.
Okay, so Ma, first off, say hello.
Hello.
That's my mom. I called her up this week to ask about my name. Both me and my older brother, his name is Kobe, we both got names that very much reflected my father's passionate Pan-African politics.
Melvin was insistent on having African names of some sort for our children. And I said, that's okay, as long as they can have a middle name that I choose, then we're fine. So we lived in Washington, D.C. at the time of my first pregnancy. And so we went to this African bookstore and it was a brown book. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a brown book that had African names in it. And they had in the book what they meant. Kobe's name meant warrior. Kai meant remember me. Which I thought was sweet that it said, remember me, because we'll always remember Kai.
It's sweet now as an adult, but as a little boy, I was like, I want to be warrior. I don't want to be remember me.
Well, they certainly fit there because my oldest child is more of a warrior.
That is a fact. That's a fact. How did you feel about these African names at the time?
I was reluctant at first, but I told Melvin, I said, here's the thing, and we talked about it. I said, I have no problem with it as long as the African names are not anything that are long and drawn out, some just complicated, some they can't spell. And we were fortunate to come across to agree with that. Melvin didn't have a problem with it. He just wanted to make sure it was an African name.
What was your problem with, like, it was just the people would find it hard to say, or?
I didn't want my children, more than anything, I didn't want my children to have trouble with a name that they would have to try to pronounce. And if they would have trouble with it, then somebody else would. And I didn't want my children to have to go through people trying to figure out how to say their name. Right. I didn't want them to have to deal with that. So that was it. A name like Kobe and Kai is easy to say and not. So it worked out well because Kobe, Melvin Wright, Kai, Malcolm Wright. So it had to have the...
It's got a rhythm.
It had the flow. Yeah, it had the flow, right? It didn't take us long to agree on those names because the main thing is that Melvin had to have African names for that because he was very, 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 very much into this black thing.
This black thing, Mom? Is that what you just...
African thing.
Yes, he was.
Well, it was an African. We had a lot of African. Everything in our home, like our curtains, our drapes were African. We had African figurines in the home. Yeah, that's how he was. So that's what we had. So
my daddy liked black stuff. And he passed
yes,
it on
he did. Me. And he wore Afro, and I wore Afro, and our children wore Afro. So had thick hair, remember?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, I'm going to leave it there, Ma. We got to let you go.
All right. Bye, hon. Bye-bye.
So that's my mom telling the story of my name. She shared Beth's concern with a complicated name. Luckily, it all turned out. Novelist and essayist Beth Nguyen is still with us. She already told us the story of both of her names, both her given Vietnamese name and the name she chose for herself. And Beth, I appreciate you sticking around while we hear from some of our listeners. Sound good to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with Jamani in Prospect Heights. Jamani, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Kyra. Love your show.
Thank you. What's the story of your name, and when did you start to think about it as something that meant something to other people as well as yourself?
It started, I was living in L.A. I'm a filmmaker, and I told your producer briefly, I was at this non-denominational gathering, Michael Beckwith, Agape Center of Truth in Santa Monica, and my girlfriends were in this goddess ceremony, and then they invited us in, the two boyfriends, and in this place, they were doing just different things, you know, and then one of the women who was heading up this goddess ceremony had a vision, and she gave me this name, said that she was given this name to give me, and it was Jamani. And I didn't embrace it at first, but, you know, every Sunday we'd come to this non-denominational place. Actually, it's a pretty cool place in L.A. Oprah goes there, a number of other people go there, but... But the point is that women started, you know, at this non-denominational place used to call me the name, and I started to little by little embrace it. And my original name is John William Layton Perry III.
So
my dad was John Perry, and he, you know, and I've been growing up in Brooklyn, and I was a musician and stuff like that. But the point is that when I started to embrace it, turns out it's Swahili, means "Oh God," and it was just a trip because of my mom's from Jamaica, the Jamaican thing, and you know, they were like, "What is this?" You know, they did not accept it, and it created a lot of family stuff. And you know, what happened was I won an award as John Perry for a film I directed. And Ozzie Davis gave me the award, blah, 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 blah. And then my older brother said, "You can't change your name." Because, you know, I literally to this day, my brother is like, I can't believe you are still, you know, using Jamani because, you know, Sony and Hollywood has recognized you as John Perry and your name has been branded. You get what I'm saying?
I do. Jamani, that is quite the story. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Nicholas in New Jersey. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
So I was listening to your episode and had thoughts rolling around in my head about my last name, which is Krawchenyuk. It is a Ukrainian last name, and it's always kind of been a point of contention for, you know, introductions, and have even been told once or twice that I'm pronouncing the name incorrectly.
Your own name.
Yes. Now, the person who was pronouncing it was telling me I was pronouncing it wrong was not Ukrainian. And so consequently, I don't really talk to them all that more because I asked them to respect and they did not. But even going even kind of further back than that, I have family who are over in Ukraine, and, they kind of talked to me about how they pronounce the last name versus how we pronounce it in the U.S. and how it's kind of been Americanized. So usually it's pronounced Krawchenyuk, whereas in the U.S. we say Krawchenyuk, pronouncing the W instead of the W as a V.
Thank you for that testimony, Nicholas. Let's go to Kim Marie in Hell's Kitchen. Let's see if we can learn as many name stories as we can here. Kim Marie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call, Kai. So I moved to New York from Boston in 1986 as a young person. I had my father's last name that I wasn't necessarily very attached to, but it was just my identity. And then being a performer, you get different jobs all the time. So I was always in different rooms with different people who didn't look like anything like me. And it really sort of changed the course of my life to be able to do that. Then in 2015, I started teaching. I was a teaching artist for a really long time. Then I became a full-time teacher in 2015, and I had this name that, like, was very specific to me, an Irish last name. And almost like I had the privilege to be able to think about it in this way, right? Like, when I was little, I thought that there were chickens on the farm, and then there were the chickens that you eat. So I thought that my last name was, like, an Irish last name, but this verb that was my last name was something totally different. And then in 2019, I have a Ibram X. Kendi inspiration as well. I read How to Be Anti-Racist, and I got to the part in the book where he talks about this king and his middle name being Philip. And then he very simply said in the book, Philip had to go. And right when he said that, I had the light turned on in my head and I thought, oh, Lynch has to go. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the midst of getting it changed legally, but I started a new job in 2019 where people started calling me Miss Al. The kids started calling me Miss L, like the letter, but also like I spell it E-L-L-E because a lot of the work that I do is around equity with women and feminism. Mm-hmm. So that was how I wanted to change it to something that was the only reference would be me. Mm-hmm. That's my story.
Thank you, Kim Marie. Taking control of your name. Let's go to Tim in Brooklyn. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kai. That Kai is a great name. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you. Tim's a pretty good name, too. Nice, short, sweet, thanks, clear.
So my father came from Japan shortly after World War II, and there was still a lot of stigma around being Japanese, and he could sort of pass for Southern European, perhaps. And so he changed the family name, which is Kawauchi, which is a beautiful name, means bridge over the great water, I believe. And he changed it so that it was kind of ambiguous, K-O-H-C-H-I, which, you know, what the hell is that? But he did that, you know, because he was trying to avoid the discussion and the possible stigma and the racism and the discrimination against Japanese people. So, you know, I own that name as, you know, a testament to, a memory to, and a tribute to those who, you know, endured that treatment and as a reminder of that reality.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Tim. Let's squeeze in one more Rommel in here in New York. Rommel, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Well, a lot of what your guest said, a lot of what Beth said resonated a lot for me. I'm also an immigrant. I came here in the 80s. I was 8 years old when I came here. And my name is Rommel, and that's spelled R-O-M-M-E-L. I'm so used to spelling it every time somebody I introduce myself. But Erwin Rommel is actually was a general for the Nazi army during the war. Mm. And I was named after him apparently because my father thought that he was, quote unquote, this is, I asked him years later, one of the good Nazis.
Wow.
His reasoning was that he tried to assassinate Hitler. He was misinformed. I think Rommel knew of the plot to assassinate him, but did not actively participate in it. And I think the only thing he did was stay quiet about it. But the funny thing is, I didn't really think much of my name, except that in the way and when I was introduced and people really actually looked at me a little bit differently and couldn't pronounce it until I was maybe about in my teens or early teens. And you can imagine how strange it was for I'm from El Salvador, and a kid from El Salvador is newly immigrated to the U.S. and learns about, you know, a little bit about who he was named after. And, you know, I'm seeing this guy in his 50s and he's commanding tanks across the Sahara Desert. It was a very odd experience for me. And just sort of the name brings up controversy even to this day. You know, obviously some people will say, Rommel, oh, you must be proud of that. But in actuality, I always follow it up with no relation, even though I'm 6 feet. And I'm very, very light-skinned and have very, very light hair. So a lot of times they'll look at me twice and they say, oh, you're from El Salvador? And they say, well, when did your parents immigrate there in the 50s and the 40s? They always think there's some story behind there. But I'm 100% Salvadoran, 100% Latino. I just carry this name with me.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for that story, Rommel. Beth, in these last few minutes before we let you go, first off, did you hear anything in any of these calls that resonated with you or that you want to react to?
I just am always moved by how names are so personal and they're so signifying of deep, you know, family histories and, you know, first name or last name. Everyone has a story that they want to tell about their names. And, you know, I'm here for that. I want to hear everyone's, you know, ups and downs about their names. I was just thinking about how I once had a landlord named Michael Jackson. You know, and he had a lot of feelings about that.
I bet he did. I wonder, you alluded to this earlier, but, you know, I mean, now as a celebrated author, a mother, a professor, in a time in which people in those kinds of roles are just really encouraged to live their full selves, we're all encouraged to bring our full selves to our jobs and our professional lives, you know, I just wonder how your life experience struggling with bringing your own full self and having changed your name to Beth, just how that feels in today's cultural context to you.
You know, I am Generation X.
Me too.
If you are a person of color growing up, you know, as Gen X, you know, we were told to hate ourselves and now we're supposed to love ourselves. Mm. And that's a pretty big turnaround. And it's been difficult for me to go from one extreme to the other.
Oh, Beth.
So that's what I'm still struggling with. But I, you know, I teach and I want my students to love themselves. You know, I want everyone to love themselves. But I also know that that's not my history at all. Mm. Because I am, you know, from a different generation that, mm. you know, internalized a lot of terrible feelings. And that's the thing that I need to deal with, which is, and that's the thing that names can bring out for a lot of us, which is, how shame is a powerful force, but the fear of judgment is maybe even stronger.
Beth Nguyen is author of the memoir Stealing Buddha's Dinner, as well as two novels. We'll have a link to her essay in The New Yorker from last year in the show notes for this episode. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And before we wrap up, we, of course, had to call up the listener who started this whole conversation. Evan, are you there?
Hey, Kai. How you doing?
So first off, thank you so very much for sending your voicemail to us. You can see all that it has inspired. And I guess the obvious question is, how is little baby Kendi? Did you, in fact, go with that name?
Yeah, Kendi is doing great. His name is Kendi Quinn. He was born, he'll be 4 weeks on Tuesday, and he came out 8 pounds, 9 ounces, and he's like 10, 10.5 now. So he's just growing so much. And, yeah, we are thrilled to have him.
And do you feel like in the end, do you feel like the name fits him?
You know, right now, yeah. And this episode is really helpful in just sort of confirming that we did a good choice with the name Kendi. I'm looking forward to the life that he lives, regardless of what connotations that name kind of gives him.
Well, I have seen pictures, I must reveal, and Kendi is a gorgeous child.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Congratulations to you and your family. We'll leave it there. Thanks so much, Evan, for both listening and talking back to us. And happy life, Kendi.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks to everybody who called in tonight. If we didn't get to you and you still want to chime in, please do record a voice memo on your smartphone and email it to us at anxiety@wnyc.org. That's anxiety@wnyc.org. United States of Anxiety is a production of WNYC Studios. Our theme music was written by Hannes Brown and performed by the Outer Borough Brass Band. Sound designed by Jared Paul. Milton Ruiz was at the boards for the live show. Our team also includes Emily Botine, Regina Dehir, Karen Frillman, and Kusha Navadar. And I am Kai Wright. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter at Kai_Wright. And of course, you can join us for the live version of the show next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Stream it at WNYC.org or tell your smart speaker to play WNYC. Till then, thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves.